It's time now for the Prescott Palette with your host, Barry Barb. Sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Finding and Making the Good is a group of community members recognizing and celebrating people doing good for others in our community. Share your stories of people doing good deeds through their website, findingandmakingthegood.com, and they'll randomly select up to three each month to be recognized. Visit findingandmakingthegood.com to nominate and contribute today, and like them on Facebook to learn more about your neighbors who are making the good in Prescott. Proud to be part of the Gatto Community Gives program. Like them on Facebook and visit their website, findingandmakingthegood.com. Sponsored by El Gato Azul.
All you need to move ahead is a college that works with you. Yavapai College has degree and certificate programs that can fast-track you for the job you want with schedule options that work with your busy life. The step you take now can secure your future. Take it. Sometimes a classroom or a learning lab is the best way out of the box. YC has classes and certificates in the most sought-after trades. Visit Yavapai College online at yc.edu/admission to register today.
Here's a shout out to my good friend Rukini and her crew of Allen Flowers and More, where they've been creating beauty and delivering happiness since 1914. Located at 1095 East Gurley Street in Prescott, Allen's is your one-stop shop for all your floral and gift needs for any occasion. Weddings, anniversaries, birthdays, or to send a pick-you-up bouquet. Allen's features a wide selection of unique gifts, cards, truffles, as well as convenience of a drive-through pickup window and flower happy hour. Allen's Flowers and More, 1095 East Gurley, 445-5131, or on the web at allensflowers.com. Welcome to the Prescott Palette, where we're going behind the scenes of Prescott's culinary, visual, and performing arts, and everything in between. And I didn't realize this until this morning, that this is a great post-Valentine's show. Ooh. The reason being, my guests today are Robert and Martha Manning, and you two were high school sweethearts, correct?
It sure is.
We're going to start the show right there. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. We started dating, believe it or not, in the 11th grade.
Yes.
The 11th grade?
Yeah. And then we wound up going to college together. And, you know, we graduated 2 weeks. We graduated in a Saturday in June, and we were married 2 Saturdays later.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So how long? All right. So I'm going to ask you, how long from 11th grade? How long have you, like...
Oh, well, we've been married 56 years.
You've been married 56 years?
Yeah, and that was...
Congratulations. That is awesome.
I guess we've been... Mm-hmm. I don't want to say how long we've been together.
We've been together a long time.
A long time. Okay, so here's the thing, though. Because being together for 56 years...
Yeah.
After going through the books and talking with you, Bob, a couple months ago, the amount of time that you two have spent together is probably more than the average couple that has been married 56 years. Plus years. Am I correct?
I assume so. I think that's a good assumption.
All right. So the thing is, you have three books you've written, Walks of a Lifetime. And I want to talk about that. And, you know, you and I spoke a bit ago. Mm-hmm. So basically the books are a culmination of your travels together side by side, taking hikes throughout the world. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason we write them, Barry, is you know, we found them to be such an important part of our lives that we really wanted to try and entice other people to try walking themselves, try some of these long-distance trails. We were just astounded when we discovered that the world is really laced with, you know, all these great trails. And we've just had a wonderful time. It's been, it's contributed to the quality of our lives.
And we'd finish a hike and our friends would ask us about it. And then they would say, well, how do you do that? And what do you do about this? And one thing they asked us is, what do you talk about? But, you know, they just didn't get it. And we found since then... when we introduce people to walking and they try it, they're hooked. One trail will do it. One successful outing and, you know, then they're suggesting trails to us.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. Because you're both from Vermont, I'm assuming, because I know you're from Vermont. Mm-hmm. You went to high school together.
Yep.
And by the water, correct? Or were you not earlier?
Yeah, actually when Martha and I first met, we were both living in Maryland. We were both kids in Maryland, in rural Maryland, going to a little high school. And But then we went off. I went to the Coast Guard for several years and went to graduate school.
In California, correct?
In California, yes. And that's where we discovered the national parks. They were just a revelation. I just didn't know that there were places like that.
And so what do you think about the national parks and the system that really just awes you? What is your draw there?
Well, there's just so many powerful landscapes. I mean, they really tell the story of the history and natural history of the United States. It's a great place to learn about all that, and it's a great place to experience it. And there's really no better way to experience than to walk the trails. And as you know, Barry, one of the books that we've written is Walks of a Lifetime in America's National Parks.
So your experience with the Park Service started in the service, and then you did your first walk, which was the John Muir, was that correct?
That was an early one.
The early one?
The first one we walked from, actually it was Martha's idea, so I'll let her tell that story. Okay.
Well, we lived in Vermont. Vermont had the first long distance trail in the United States, and I think in the world. Bob can correct me on that one, but the first one in the United States, and it ran from the Massachusetts border to the Canadian border and along the ridgeline of the Green Mountains. And I thought we ought to do it here. We are living in Vermont. We should, you know.
Why not?
Why not?
And it's only,
275
miles? Okay.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the northern part is hard. But we went out and decided we'd do it on the weekends because that was the amount of time that we could devote to it. And it was wonderful.
So I want to stop you real quick.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things I think people get confused about. When you say you're doing a long-distance hike, you're not doing this all in one stretch. You're not starting on Monday, finish on Friday.
Yeah.
These are some of these experiences where you do in pieces and break them up.
Definitely, yes.
Okay.
And we both prefer to do them all, and now that we've gotten into it, we prefer to go from point A to point B, and that's it. You know,
okay.
Really immerse yourself in the experience. But doing it a bite at a time worked beautifully. And you
right.
know, sometimes that works better. So we'd go out and we went to places in Vermont that, although we'd lived there for probably a couple of decades at that mm-hmm. point, we hadn't seen, experienced, and it was just wonderful. So then Bob had the bright idea that we should try an international trip. And that sort of frightened me because I didn't grow up playing sports, organized sports, and I thought, I'm not athletic, you know, I can't do this. But it turns out that I could. Women can walk. I mean, come on.
And, you do it every day, right?
Yeah. And you don't need remarkable athletic ability to go out and walk
right.
during the day. So yeah. then we did the coast to coast.
Across England, yes. Somebody had given me a book about hiking in England. And I thought, wow, I didn't even know that, you know, this opportunities existed out there. And one of them was what was called the Coast to Coast Trail, where you okay. walk across England from the North Sea to the Irish Sea.
Now, it's skinny.
It seems like something you would just, anybody would go, let's do this.
It's kind of skinny up there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. It's a couple hundred miles. And so we got up our courage and off we went. And we did that all in one fell swoop. And it was remarkable. You know, it was all new to us. The country was new to us, the landscape, the people, the culture of walking. In Europe, there's a real history of walking. People just go out and do it.
Now, had either of you traveled to Europe prior to this, or was this
yes.
like...
Yes.
Okay, so it wasn't your first, like, immersion, but...
Nope. But okay. it was our first deep immersion.
Okay.
And then we went and walked the John Muir Trail in California, okay. Which goes from Yosemite National Park to the top of Mount Whitney. That was a backpacking trip, and that was a harder. But it was a place that was just magical to me.
I mean, John's like a hero of yours.
Oh, John Muir was a hero for sure.
So tell me a little bit, before we go in, tell a little bit about your background as well, your involvement with the national parks and your appreciation, your education and your sponsorship, yeah. so to speak, of it.
Yeah. Quickly, my dad was a marine biologist, and so he worked at this little remote research station on Chesapeake Bay, and that's where I grew up. I was a big boater.
Okay.
And that's what ultimately led me into the Coast Guard. But I went to college first, Martha and I did, because that's what our parents expected us to do. But then, you know, I knew that I was going to go into the military. So I did. But I got myself into the Coast Guard because I had that boating background.
And okay.
stationed in California, in San Francisco, doing boating safety issues for the Coast Guard. And that's where we discovered Yosemite National Park. We decided, hey, let's one weekend, let's go to Yosemite and see what that's like.
We checked out equipment from the Coast Guard. They had, you know, tents and sleeping bags and all this stuff, and we were bold. And
yeah, we didn't know what we were doing.
Absolutely not.
We borrowed this tent that must have slept like 15 people.
And it was just the two of you?
Just the two of us.
Oh, that's nice. In case you got an argument, you're on that side,
yes.
I'm on this side. That's
and
how
we had
last.
I remember I put our clothes in a suitcase because I didn't know. I'd never been camping.
You put your clothes in a suitcase to go camping?
It was car camping, you know, like you unloaded from the car and, you know.
Yeah, we were neophytes. But yeah, I'll tell you, Barry, by the time we left, by the time I finished my obligation in the Coast Guard 3 years later, we had been to lots of national parks, and we were getting pretty accomplished at hiking. Mm-hmm. I had decided in the meantime that I would go to graduate school to learn how to manage parks, and then I would get a job with the National Park Service. I went to Michigan State University as a graduate student in their graduate program, and it was the first time in my life that I really enjoyed school. I mean, I just got fully engaged in it and decided, talked to my professors and decided, that's not a bad lifestyle. And so I stayed on for a doctorate and wound up as a professor at the University of Vermont, where I taught about the history and philosophy and management of national parks and did a research program with the National Park Service.
So what do you, I know we talked about this prior, how do you feel the parks are being serviced currently? There's a history that goes along with it, but where do you think we are?
Yeah, I think we're struggling. I think that, first of all, I want to talk about all the good things. So there are more than 400 units of the national park system in the U.S. And as I mentioned earlier, I think they really do a good job of telling the story of the natural history and the cultural history as well of the United States. And, you know, that's very powerful. And of course, the best way to experience them is on foot. I think the National Park Service is struggling. I think that they're substantially underfunded and understaffed. Morale is not good in my experience. When I was at the university, I was allowed to take sabbatical leaves from the university, and I spent 4 year-long periods working with the National Park Service in various national parks. So I got to rub elbows with Park Service staff, and you know, there's not a more committed and dedicated bunch in the United States, but I think they often just don't have the resources they need to do the job that's needed.
Tell them about the contrast to Disney.
Yes. So, my goodness, the National Park Service has about 20,000 employees. Now, that sounds like a lot, but the National Park System is 85 million acres. 20,000 employees. Disney World has more employees than the National Park Service.
Really?
Yeah, and isn't that shameful in some ways?
Amazing.
And they get the National Park Service gets less than 0.1% of the national budget. I think we can do better than that, Barry.
So really, it's a passion project for these folks that are working for the most part.
It
careers
is.
And passion and
there's
education.
There's an old saying in the Park Service that they get paid in sunsets.
Paid sunsets.
yes, but they do need some dollars as well.
Yeah, yeah, I can understand that. So Martha, were you in education also, or what was your background?
No, I supported Bob largely in his endeavors. Bob is too modest to say he was kind of a star in the academic world, but I ran the household and dealt largely with the kids. I'm not that he was absent or anything, but I just sort of was in
right
the
way.
I was in the background, and
right.
I had some part-time jobs that were completely unrelated.
Right.
In the meantime, when things sort of needed them. And so I was able to go with Bob. If Bob was going to go to a conference on national parks at such and such place, I could go with him. And we made the most of those opportunities.
Right.
Yep. We always found a place to hike.
So now how many hikes have you done? So my question, I don't want to talk about this, what's the difference between a hike and a walk?
Well,
they're the same thing.
I think they're the same thing, yes.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of fruitless to try and parse out the difference.
Right.
Somebody said that every every walk is a hike, but not every hike is a walk, or maybe it's the opposite. But anyway.
Might be the other way around.
It's hard to know. You know, I think we do the kind of walks that we enjoy, and we encourage other people to do the kind of walks that they enjoy.
Right. So one of the things I love about, I've been flipping through the book you gave me, The Walks of a Lifetime. I'll tell you, it's just, you have to know how fortunate you are.
Oh, yes.
I'm just like flipping through thing like, Lordy, it's only one of the three books.
Yeah.
So when you do these, especially on the longer hikes, well, I think most hikes, you're not on these hikes by yourselves all the time. Is that correct? Or
well typically we are.
Okay.
We prefer to travel independently. But, you know, I certainly want to stress that there are so many options for people. If they'd prefer to hike with a group, there are certainly those options. There are businesses out there in the world that, lots of them actually, that will plan hikes for you and, you know, make accommodations, reservations if you want to go that kind of on a hike.
Right.
And they'll do that for you as an independent traveler, or they'll do that for you, you know, with a group.
Right. Now, you were talking about the one that, what was the walk you did in Spain?
The Camino de Santiago.
See, you say it so much better, that's why I didn't try to say it.
my favorite. The Camino de Santiago is an ancient pilgrimage route, and you walk where the pilgrims have walked, going through the towns that the pilgrims went through, go to church, and where the pilgrims have gone to church. It's just a totally immersive experience. And people from all over the world have glommed onto this. It's become very popular. And that's the kind of thing where typically you carry your own gear, because pilgrims carry, you don't have to wear a cloak and have a staff, and you know, but typically you carry your own gear.
You're not in period garb, is what you're saying.
But you don't. You don't have to do it that way.
Right.
We have friends who did a portion of it in one of the most glamorous ways possible. They went with one of the companies that's extremely high-end, and it had support vans. And so if they got to an intersection, the support van was there with lemonade and snacks. And if you wanted a ride for, you know, an hour or so, they would take you.
But you're not doing this, right? You're the purist.
We're more pure. But that didn't mean that they didn't have a wonderful
right.
time. And that didn't mean that they didn't have a lot of the same experience that we did.
Right. So how long is this trail?
It's about
500 miles.
500 miles, yeah.
Okay, so how long did it take you to do 500 miles?
5 weeks.
5 weeks.
5 weeks?
Yeah.
Oh, it was wonderful, though, because you got to get right. You just, the world drifted away, you know,
right.
and your world was much smaller and simpler. And where am I going to eat? Where am I going to stay? How much farther is it? You know,
right.
Life became so much simpler and much more relaxing, and that allowed you to be invigorated with your thoughts. And
it almost sounds like it's like a mesmerizing. What's the word I'm thinking of here?
Yeah, well, it's very immersive, and it has a, you know, by definition, it has a very important spiritual component to it.
Right.
It's this pilgrimage across northern Spain to the place where St. James is buried in the cathedral at Santiago. And it's just magical. When you finish your 500-mile journey, you go to what's called the Pilgrim's Mass that's held in the cathedral each day. You see people that you saw along the way, and it's just a celebration.
So on a trail of that length that is that popular and well-traveled, how many people do you come across? I mean, do you kind of have the opportunity to, like you said, you meet people and then you see them later on down the trail? And
yeah, that one is actually getting crowded.
Yes.
Oh, really?
There are perhaps too many enthusiastic walkers. But you find that you see some people for a few days and then you don't see them. But often when you look along the landscapes, and in some cases there are vast landscapes you can look along, you see other people out there walking. And,
right.
you know, maybe you join up for a bit. Maybe you have dinner together. Maybe you never see them again. Or maybe you see them for several days in a row. And we would – maybe you don't even know their names.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
we would know them like the German girls who drank the shandies. You know, we walked along with them for a few days.
They became the German girls who drank the shandies for the rest of the trip.
And, everybody helps each other. Like – we pointed out to some people who were struggling that they could get their bag shipped. You know, you can get your bag. So they went to lightweight. They were about to drop out. They went to lightweight backpacks with day packs, and then they ship their big bag from hostel to hostel or in the inn.
Okay, so let's go back. So how big is the pack you're carrying? If you, when you go on a trip, life size, how heavy is that?
It's not that heavy nowadays, but it used to be.
Martha is the gearhead, so I'll let her talk about
that. Okay,
well,
there you go.
Well, when we did the John Muir Trail, for example, Bob had a Kelty pack that was bomb-proof, and it was wonderful. You could sit it up, and you could literally throw things into it, the open mouth of it from across the room, but it weighed 7.5 pounds.
Empty.
So, you know, I started us on the gear, lightweight gear thing at that point. And our current day packs, excuse me, our current backpacks now weigh about 1 pound a piece. They're made out of the same material that sails are made out of.
Really?
And everything is lightweight. Like, we don't carry a big rubber bucket. We have a bucket that's made out of that same silk cloth.
Like the
nylon.
Dog to take for the, while their dog's on a trail type thing.
So
that's
it's,
how it is?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Exactly.
Everything is like, you wear the same clothes, so there's the savings. But, you know, we had a 4 pound tent. We thought that was pretty
shoes.
Reasonable.
Shoes?
But our shoes, we went from hiking boots, which you don't need on the majority of these walks, to trail runners.
So the pack itself.
I don't think
how
my.
How much is on your back?
I don't think my pack. Ever weighed more, once I went light, weighed more than 20 pounds, and
really?
That's with full water.
No way.
And food. No, I mean, it's remarkable. And people used to stop us, because here we are, we're not 18, and we're out with these backpacks on, so obviously we're backpacking, and they're struggling under these 65-pound packs or whatever they had, and they would ask us about them. But more and more people are going lightweight, so... You know, it's becoming much more available.
So when you're on it, when you're on the trails, because again, flipping through the book, you've stayed in some really cool places. You've stayed in some guest houses. And,
yeah.
But on a trip like this, a trail like this, are you staying in huts? Are you staying in hostels? Where are you staying?
We stayed in a variety of places on the Camino. We never backpacked, and people don't camp on the Camino. It's really, they have to stealth camp if they do. There are hostels which are open to all ages. Some of which are dormitory spaces.
Okay.
Some of which have private rooms. Some of them have private bathrooms. I mean, there's a gauntlet there. We stayed mostly in little family-run inns or bed and breakfasts or just very simple accommodations.
Yeah.
But
so how many walks have you? How many do you know exactly how many you've actually done?
Do you dozens of the. We've done tens of thousands of miles of walking in our adult lifetimes, but we've done. Oh, dozens and dozens. I mean,
Well, at least, because you've probably done, I think you said, how many did you say you were up to the other day? When we sat down the first time?
No, I'm sorry. How many
walks have you completed?
Oh, yeah, like Martha says, dozens. I don't think we've ever stopped to really count them up. Now, that book that you're looking at now, the most recent one, Walks of a Lifetime from Around the World, that one has 40 hikes. And our sort of brand, Barry, on these
But these
books.
Are all ones that you have done.
Yes.
These are not I heard about this trail.
No.
And what I love about it is, despite the fact there are very few people that will ever get to do all 40 of these hikes here. But you give such a good visual, and you have the maps in there and the distance. You can almost visually walk through these hikes with you.
We're trying to entice you, Barry.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes. We're trying to encourage you to open your eyes and think about where you could walk.
All right,
and then,
so if you...
We just suggested to two separate friends, that they do what we have done also, is you have what is called community-centered, or you go... We went to Amalfi at Christmas one time, and...
Amalfi, Italy,
and we walked around. We walked along the coastline. We walked up in the mountains. Every day we did a day hike, but we came back to the little apartment that we had rented. And then we could celebrate with the town of Amalfi and their Christmas celebrations, which are very different than here in the United States.
I'm sure.
And, you know, so a long-distance walk, it wasn't linear, but we consider that long-distance walking as well.
Right.
And
we walked for 10 days, and it was magical.
Yeah,
so if you were going to entice somebody to walk, to experience some of the things you've done. Being in Prescott is a great, hello. But what would you recommend for somebody, say, any age, 20, 30, 40, 50, to get outside, how would you suggest they start? Which sounds silly, but...
No.
I tried this with my mother for years. Yeah. Like, just walk around the neighborhood.
Yes.
Go a little longer. Then just go a little longer. And mm-hmm. So what would you recommend?
I'd recommend that if they haven't walked at all. I mean, most people, a lot of people in Prescott are walkers. You know, they're walking. Maybe they're only going in their neighborhoods, and so maybe they need to get out on some of the easier sections of the Prescott Circle Trail. We've always preached, if you will, that you walk within your abilities, and then you kind of stretch your abilities. You know, you don't go out and say, well, I'm going to do, you know, this 300-mile trail that involves backpacking. First, you start small, and maybe get some friends to hike with you, and you kind of encourage each other. There are good hiking groups in Prescott. There are neighborhood hiking groups. There's Trekabouts, which is affiliated with the city. There's a Prescott Hiking Club. I mean, there are innumerable groups you can go out with. And you kind of start small and get confidence and then keep pushing it.
So what do you feel is the biggest benefit?
Oh.
Gosh.
There's more than one.
My immediate reaction is to say there are so many of the benefits. I mean, obviously there's a physical health.
Right.
So it's just good for you to be out on your feet and walking.
There's mental health.
And there's mental health, absolutely. Especially if you're walking with a group.
So there's a social aspect to
community.
It can be social.
There's a community part of it.
There's the visual, just immersing yourself in nature. And because we talked about this before that, you know, we drive from here to there every day, 365 days a year, and we'll never notice that little tree right there knocked over 2 months ago because we don't see it.
When we moved to Prescott, we made new friends who suggested we hike the Circle Trail with them.
Now, what is the Circle Trail? Just
the Circle Trail is 54 miles encircling the city of Prescott. And it goes through different landscapes, what was good for us was you get different viewpoints of what is Prescott, and you can look on, you walk past the car dealerships that are, out off of Willow Creek Road, for example. You can see them in the foreground for a short section. But generally, you're in the woods, and you get a feel. You're up on Pea Mountain, and you can look down on Prescott, or you come at it from a different direction. You can see the lakes, and it really helped to orient us to our community to make us feel more of our community. And we certainly didn't do that all in one day either. We did that on, a Sunday, every Sunday morning, Sunday morning, Sunday morning, as it worked into our schedule.
So what about the there's the Pea Vine?
Yeah, the Pea Vine Trail.
Easy walking trail?
Oh, it's a lovely walking trail.
And what about the Constellation?
Constellation Trail, absolutely.
There's the Iron King. Our hiking group is going to do the North Pea Vine.
What's the name of your hiking group, just out of curiosity?
Hometown Hikers.
Okay.
Great name, isn't it?
I love that, yeah.
We even have badges now. But we're going to do the North Pea Vine, which is in Chino. And that's 5.8 miles, and it's a point-to-point. And you see where the and somebody in our group will talk about the history of the train when you get with other people, they all bring different things to the table, and that's pretty wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that's one of the great things about Prescott is that there's so many opportunities out there that are just outside our doors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just taking advantage of it, and then again, the sense of community that comes with hiking and going with your neighbors and friends and things like that. Well, I hate to say this, but we're going to have to wrap this up.
Oh, dear.
I know. We should have done two shows. But I love the fact, I love the fact that the post-Valentine's Day, this is a perfect show. I mean, blessings to both of you. One of you is a saint, and I'm assuming it's not Bob. But, to last 56 plus years, that's amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
And, I love the books. The books are available online at Amazon and other things, but also Peregrine have them?
I hope so.
I hope they do, too. They better. My guest today, Bob, Bob and Martha Manning, authors of Walks of a Lifetime and other tomes. After, what are the other two called?
Walks of a Lifetime in America's National Parks and Walks of a Lifetime from Around the World. Those are their two big ones these days.
Well, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, yeah.
Hope we'll sit down again and chat some more. Maybe we'll go on a hike. Who knows?
Yeah. Right.
A walk.
Yeah,
a walk.
Or maybe we'll come to lunch one day at El Gato.
Sounds good.
Okay.
My name is Barry. Be sure to check my column every Thursday in the Cross Street section of the Daily Courier. Who I'm talking with next. And we'll see you next week on the Prescott Palette. You've been listening to the Prescott Palette on KQ&A 1130 AM every Saturday at 12 noon. If you know someone who's doing great things, have a special event, or just got a great story, drop me a line at presspalette@gmail.com. That's P-R-E-S, palette@gmail.com, and we'll get them on the air. In the meantime, see who I'm talking to every Thursday in the Across the Street section of the Daily Courier and on Facebook at Prescott Palette.